The following podcast is brought to you by the Communication and Media Studies Department at Dominican University of California. Hey, what's up, everybody? This is Fitzroy, and you are listening to Cracking the Nature Code. Whales singing pop music, termites going to architecture school, ants harvesting in their farms. These and other such oddities of the natural world have fascinated me, as countless other humans throughout history. If you are curious like me, or perhaps you're feeling like something's missing and you're experiencing life as simply mundane, join me to explore these mysteries with humor and humility to experience the world in a brand new way. What? I'm reading this Discover magazine and it says in this article that the human brain is shrinking. What? About 10% in the last 40,000 years? I'm feeling dumber already. There's just no way, right? Han, it says over here that our brain is shrinking. Are we getting dumber? I don't get it. I thought we were supposed to be getting smarter. Progress, right? Paying all this money for my bachelor's. Useless. Hon, you want some adventure?
No.
Pack your bags, we're moving to Bermuda. I don't want to be found by those collectors. Hey, welcome everybody to Nerd Talks this evening, our own version of TED Talks at the amazing Neuron Lounge. It's a great way to spend every last Friday of the month. My name is Fitzroy, and I'm going to open up the floor this evening. I have a little podcast show called Cracking the Nature Code.
Yay!
Whoa, that's surprising. I didn't know anybody was listening.
Yay!
Well, thank you. Thank you for coming. Anyway, I was really lucky to pitch my show to John here at the bar, and he said, yeah, come on down, do it live. So we're gonna try it, see how it works. So you heard the human brain is shrinking, right? I have this article from Discover magazine right here. It says that the human brain has shrunk about 10% in the last 40,000 years. Well, that was a surprise to me, but I guess I'm not alone. It says that's a reversal from a previous theory of cranial expansion, is what they called it. But I guess it's not like that after all. But why is it shrinking? Let me see. From every region with data, there seems to have been roughly about half cup decrease in endocranial volume. Half cup. I didn't know we were using baking measurements here. I better pull out my beginner's cookbook. Right? I wonder how many tablespoons is in that. All right. All kidding aside. In any case, what's intelligence? Isn't it obvious? At least that's what I thought, until I started working on this episode. And boy, did I fall into a rabbit hole. I found myself having to confront all the assumptions that I had. I didn't even know that I had them. So why don't we start there? Looking at human evolution, I think that having taken care of those most pressing needs and still having enough free time for leisure, the right conditions were present for our early human ancestors to be able to ponder on higher impulses, to be able to reflect upon the world and upon themselves. And I wonder, how far have we come in those millions of years? Have we become more intelligent or more unintelligent? And what may be the implications of such reduction in brain mass, as the magazine says? So as I started contemplating on how I would try to conceptualize this question of intelligence, and as always, to try to find the similarities, the analogy with nature, which I do on every episode, I started thinking about the question of intelligence versus instinct. And the reason I have arrived at that idea is because I assume that our brain is intelligent, our human actions are intelligent. And when we start thinking about impulses or animal reactions, we tend to refer to them as instincts. So it was pretty clear to me that these two things needed to be conceptualized or clarified. And looking at the definition of intelligence, I had looked it up in Merriam-Webster, and it said that it had to do with the ability to learn or understand how to deal with new and trying situations. And it talked about the use of reason. And as far as the definition of instinct, it talked about instinct being specific responses to environmental stimuli, the reactions being below the conscious level. So if we could agree that intelligence refers to conscious actions and the use of reason, and instincts refer to subconscious or mechanical actions, then perhaps we can use that as a foundation to start conceptualizing this question of intelligence in relation to humans and nature overall. So, in interest of time and to save you all the trouble of going down the rabbit hole with me, let me just share my conclusions with you and the supporting ideas or evidence that I found which made me arrive at such conclusions. Okay. I'm just going to go out on a limb and propose that essentially intelligence and instinct are one and the same. And the definitions only describe the relative perspective from which they are viewed. It is a question of scale, in other words. Because I wonder, was intelligence required for the first human societies to be formed and function in a sustainable way? Or was it purely instinctual? How did such complexity in human organization come about? Is that the same type or level of intelligence required for small groups of organisms to self-organize and grow into thriving ecosystems? Is that the same type or level of intelligence required for groups of cells to grow and self-organize into organs and fully functioning living beings? Because if those assertions are indeed true, then we must revise our assumptions about the brain and intelligence. Because I don't know about you, but unknowingly, I always assume that intelligence is found in the brain. That intelligence is the brain. And therefore, plants, microbes, and cells are only acting mechanically, right? Instinctually. But as I have pondered on these questions and performed some general research, I have come to believe that intelligence is not the brain. That intelligence functions and expresses itself through the brain in most organisms, but it is not because of the centralized brain that intelligence exists. So I came across some philosophical or spiritual schools, such as the philosophy of universal intelligence, that posit that the universe and everything in it is intelligent, and that it is only a question of degree of intelligence which differentiates the level of evolution between organisms. So if we delve a little bit deeper into this concept of instincts, from our human perspective, we tend to think of those as innate responses or behaviors of an organism. But I think unknowingly, we tend to think of them as not being intelligent. But is that true? So I ask you, when viewed from a certain scale, aren't the same patterns seen in the self-organization and functioning of human societies? I mean, take a step back and think of what it feels like to be flying. Now, I don't know about you, but to me, at 5 to 10,000 feet, large human gatherings or movements make humans resemble ants. At 15 to 20,000 feet, The transportation infrastructure resembles the veins and movements of fluids in the circulatory system. And when viewed from 35 to 40,000 feet, populated areas resemble mycelium networks, especially at night. So if from our human perspective, the functioning of our organs and cells are nothing more than mechanical instinctual processes and functions, can we then propose that from the perspective of the Earth as a living entity, the processes and functions of all organic life on Earth are also mechanical and instinctual? Where can intelligence be pinpointed from that perspective? And if it can be, somehow, can't the same approach be used to pinpoint the intelligence found in the human organs and cells? One may argue that human interactions and intelligence strategies in competition differentiate a human society from the self-organization of the body. But I came across some peer-reviewed research which demonstrated the universality of cell competition. The cells themselves having to compete to stay relevant and alive, developing individual and group strategies to accomplish the goal. One may also argue that humans have the capacity to alter and control much of the environment at will. But isn't it also true for how cells and microbes modify their environment to make it suitable for their existence? We have explored those same capabilities in animals and microscopic life in our previous episodes of the show. So why does it feel that we as humans, with our intelligence and capabilities, are so different and unique from the rest of nature? I ponder on that question. And I think that it has to do with a sort of event horizon. The idea that being the apex species and the latest evolutionary step on Earth places our relative psyche above the other evolutionary steps below us. We do not readily have a higher evolutionary step to compare to above us, so we seem to be at the apex, the very top, and everything else is below us. And I think that poses a challenge for us because we fall into the trap of the Earth-centric universe. I don't know if you ever came across that movie called Space Odyssey 2001. The very first time that I saw that movie, the opening scene was so impactful in my mind because I saw these primate beings in this desolate world moving in groups and coming across this otherworldly monolith, a strong symbol of higher intelligence, unlike anything else in their world. And something inherent in their mind understands that that object does not belong there. They cannot comprehend it. They fear it. Well, I think we may be on the brink of such a revolution in our human intelligence. Artificial intelligence, AI, as it is understood and anticipated by the forward thinkers that can see what's coming, people like Elon Musk and the like, tell us that the evolutionary leap in intelligence that AI will bring upon us will place us in an evolutionary step so far behind that our own human intelligence would be analogous to a primate's intelligence compared to that of a human's. In my opinion, however, there is still one caveat. Because our human species has been responsible for the arising of AI, we will end up believing that we are still more intelligent, that we can control it, and therefore we are stronger, more powerful, more intelligent. If we don't agree with its assertions, we will simply ignore it. So, unfortunately, there is no way to experience firsthand what it means to have a higher intelligence above our level, because it would take an event so improbable, so otherworldly, as to have alien intelligence make itself present on Earth through its artifacts or beings, for us to finally comprehend the idea that intelligence permeates the whole universe. So, in closing, I'd like to leave you with this thought. To think that we, as humans, possess intelligence and act intelligently, but other living species on Earth and our organs and cells do not possess intelligence and act only mechanically, is to deny our own intelligence, because it only serves to demonstrate we have not seen and comprehended the whole picture. The evidence is staring at us, right beneath our noses. And it would take only a little time spent in nature and some basic research to begin unraveling this conundrum between intelligence and instinct, between conscious behavior and mechanical behavior. If you feel inspired by this talk, I urge you to search for videos on YouTube about molecular motors inside the cell, intelligent machinery that transport materials up and down microtubules, walking on 2-foot-like structures, and with long legs to help them get over obstacles. To be curious is to be open for growth. So, as long as we can still keep developing our intelligence, I invite you to keep on cracking the Nature Code. Thanks, everybody. See you next time.